For Tuesday, March 27th, 2018 is hereby called. I'd like to welcome everyone here today. Deputy Mayor Susan McLeod sends her regrets. And you will note the council is wearing purple ribbons today in recognition of Epilepsy Awareness Month. Under the changes approval of Agenda 2.0, I do have some additions to bring forward today to the agenda. Under Engineering and Works, under 10.2, we will have a report on the water service interruption yesterday. Under Finance, under 11.1, we will have an item under Region of Queens Municipality General Insurance. And under Planning, under 13.4, we will have a purchase-sale agreement extension request for the former Gorham School property on Pizant. Are there any other additions or amendments to the agenda, Councilor Fancy?
I'd like to be able to give a report on the affordable housing conference on the over the weekend.
And that would be under 15.0 other.
Okay.
So that would be 15.3. Any other additions or changes to the agenda today? A motion to approve the agenda as amended is in order. Moved by Councilor Fisk, seconded by Councilor Kelly. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. We now move to 3.0 presentations, and we're pleased today to have 3.1, the presentation by Nancy Green, South Shore Housing Action Coalition. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm having some technical difficulties. Hopefully Christine can help me get up my slides.
That's great.
So, good morning, Your Worship, and members of Council. It's nice to see you all. I haven't been here for a while, so thank you since I remember. Thank you for making time for me on your agenda this morning. So this morning I am here as a member of the South Shore Housing Action Coalition, just really to share with you some highlights from the most recent census numbers, which come from the 2016 Census of Canada. And the intention of this presentation is really just to provide you with an update and bring your attention to the latest numbers. And in many cases, you'll see that the numbers speak for themselves. So let's have a look. I did notice there are a few typos, so I'll try to remember to bring your attention to those. The first is on this slide. So this is the population data that we have from the census about the region of Queens, and you may be familiar with these numbers, so I won't say too much about them. The population, not which it says on the slide, but it has decreased since 2006 by 7.8% when it was just over 11,000. And is now at about 10,300. The population has also aged, with the median age increasing by almost 7 years since 2006, when it was 46.3 years. And in 2011, it was 49.6, so it's continuing to rise and is now in at 53.2 years. Um, 24.5% of households in the region of Queens are considered to be low income based on the low income measure after tax. And this is a measure that takes into account the household needs based on its size, because the larger the household, the more it costs. So in 2011, this number was 23.6, so it has increased slightly. I think it gives us the truest picture of the household, the percentage of households in the community that are really struggling to make ends meet. This slide talks about the changing household picture in the region of Queens, or the composition of households. When we looked at all the municipal units across Lunenburg and Queens counties, we saw that all are experiencing an increase in the number of households but all the households are getting smaller. So overall, for the region of Queens, the number of households has increased very slightly since 2006 by 1.2%, or about 55 households is the actual increase since 2006. However, the number of one-person households has increased from 1,100 to 1,400, just over 1,400 since 2006. And this is a 30.5% increase that we're seeing. And that's probably due to the older population and people living on their own as they age. Housing tenure, so what does it look like in the region of Queens? So 19% of households are tenants, they're renting their home. In 2006, this number was 14.5%, so it has increased. And of course, the flip side of that is if 19% are renting, then 81% are owning their home. And that in 2006, that was 85.4%. And in 2016, 195 people were living in subsidized housing within the region, which is up from 181 in 2011. So, and that's an increase year over year of 7.7%. This slide shows you the median household incomes before and after tax. So the median household income for all households, so if you looked at all the households and we lined up all of their incomes, $47,680 would be right smack dab in the middle. So it's slightly different than the average. The average is usually higher because it accounts for those outliers at the top. But the median tells us this is kind of the middle of the road for Queens County. For one-person households, that is $23,979 a year. And for a lone parent, the median household income is $36,736. Overall, however, the median household income has increased since 2011 by 5.8%, or by $2,600. So that's a picture of the incomes. So core housing need. If we start to dig into what all this means in terms of housing, core housing need is the standard measure that CMHC uses to tell us about who is housing insecure in a community. So the measurement that they use, or the standards that they use, is that a household is in core housing need if its housing does not meet one or more of adequacy, suitability, or affordability standards, and it would have to spend 30% or more of its before tax income to access acceptable local housing. It's a lot. There's a lot in that definition. So it needs to be suitable for the family. So there's enough bedrooms in the house for everyone. Adequate, it needs to be in good repair. It needs to suit the needs. It needs to be accessible to the family and all of its members. And then the affordability standard is really that 30% piece, and that's what most people think of when they think of core housing need, is are they spending more than 30% of their income on housing? So overall, the core housing need within the region of Queens is at 17.6%. If we look at homeowners, it's only 11.7%, one of the lower ones across our region. However, when we look at who's renting in the community, 43, I think that should be 42.2% of renters, not 43.3%, that was Bridgewater. They are in core housing need. So, all, you know, nearing half of all renters in the region are spending more than that 30% value on their housing costs. So, I know we always get asked, what is affordable? What is affordable for someone in the community? And this is one way of looking at giving you something to compare to or think about. So, if I took those median household incomes, applied that 30% standard to that income and divided it by 12, this is what I came up as, what would be an affordable monthly rent for people with a median income at those levels. So for all households, $1,192 would be an affordable income. If you're a lone parent family, based on the median income, $918.40. However, if you're a one person household, $599.48 is what would be considered affordable. And that's just the median. So that's the people that are in the middle of all the incomes in the community. Those falling below that would be in a much more dire situation. So as you can see, the average shelter costs within the region of Queens for a tenant, $669. So if you're a one-person household making the median household income in this community, you're already behind. And if you are a homeowner as well, if you're a one-person household, $674 is the average homeowner cost within the region. This slide is kind of the last slide of the data from the report. And it feels kind of out of place to me, but it's still important to look at what our housing stock looks like in the community. 56.8% of the housing was built before 1980, so it's nearing at least 40 years old, if not older, kind of like me, getting there, approaching 40. And as we get older, it costs more. The repair is more costly, maintenance is more difficult, it requires more maintenance. And that can be a challenge for people as well, because those homes are less efficient, cost more to heat, those repairs are costly and difficult to do as you age too with your home. All of this adds to additional costs for shelter and is something to pay attention to. So for the region of Queens, just to recap, the population is slowly decreasing, which I know you're aware of, and aging. The number of households is increasing and the size is shrinking, with 30.3% of households being one-person households. And while core housing need among all households is relatively low at 17.6%, 43.3% of renters are experiencing core housing need, or 42.2% of renters are experiencing core housing need. So how does this compare to other municipalities in Lunenburg and Queens counties? So this slide is showing you the rental and ownership costs across Lunenburg and Queens County. Certainly, the region of Queens has the lowest cost, shelter costs across the six municipalities on the South Shore. Mahon Bay is really charging ahead with the highest. They've had quite a significant increase in the last 5 years since the last census data in terms of their average costs. And then Town of Lunenburg and Town of Bridgewater are the top three. I have a couple of additional slides that I want to share with you before I move on here. Just keep on hand those down. If we look at the first piece, oh wait, Kevin gets a copy. This slide here is showing the median household incomes across Lunenburg and Queens counties. And what we see is the region of Queens, where are you? Region of Queens has the lowest one-person median household income among the six municipal units. And that's the one that really stands out. Otherwise, you're around where everyone else is. Hope everyone has a copy of that. They will be in, Christine has copies of those to share as well. I just didn't get it to her in time. I had this brilliant idea, I'd have these extra slides. It didn't work out so well. And if you flip that page over on the other side, I took those affordable household costs for the median incomes and placed them against the average household costs in the community. And as I mentioned, you see that Region of Queens for a one-person household is below the average shelter costs for both tenants and owners. The gap is not great between the lone parent household and the tenant and ownership costs, but not terrible. It's not as bad. Bridgewater, their gap is very close, so it means that more and more people who have those median incomes are really stretched or are closer to being at housing insecure and vulnerable. But for the region of Queens, what really stood out is that one-person household is already, if they're at a medium income, they're below that average cost. And when we look at c- for housing need in terms of Lunenburg and Queens counties, you'll see that the region is third behind Mahone Bay and Tandem Bridgewater for tenants at that 43.3%. And for homeowners, you know, the overall number, you're right in the middle, I would say, and for ranked fourth. And for homeowners, you're just above Tandem Bridgewater and the District of Lunenburg. Ownership core housing need is at 11.4%, and the Region of Queens is 11.6%. So there's good things happening in Queens, or better things that are happening in Queens than are in other regions. However, really that tenant core housing need number is very high, and is a concern. And I would say it's because the incomes are lower than the other communities in the South Shore. So that's all I have to share with you this morning. I don't have any specific asks of council this morning. I think the numbers are compelling enough on their own, and we really appreciate your ongoing involvement and commitment and attention to housing issues in the community. I know Councillor Fancy has been involved with SHAC, and before that, Councillor McLeod, Deputy Mayor McLeod, was also a member of our committee, and I know Jack continues to advocate in his community and bring those issues forward to our coalition from Queens, and recently attended, I think you're sharing this morning, attended a conversation with one of the initiatives this week. So we appreciate that leadership and hope that you'll continue to make housing a priority in the community.
Thank you, Nancy. Any councillors have questions or comments on the presentation this morning? Councillor Kelly?
Hi. Thanks for that. I just missed that last part. What does the core housing need stand for? What does that actually mean, core housing need?
So it's a measure that the Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation uses to determine who's housing insecure. So who's vulnerable in terms of their housing, that they're paying a little bit too much, or that their housing isn't meeting what that family needs. So there's three different things that you can look at to determine if a family's in core housing need or a household is in core housing need. So if it's inadequate for the family, it's not healthy, it's in poor repair, it's not suitable for the family, there's not enough bedrooms for everyone, it's not accessible for people in the household, like maybe they need a ramp if somebody is disabled or has mobility challenges, or they're paying more than 30% of their income each month on housing, and they're considered to be in poor housing need.
And how are those figures assessed? Do you know about all these families, or do you visit them all, or is it a random?
Well, this data comes from the census. So when people complete their census surveys, then they take that and look at how people have responded to those surveys. When we did our housing needs assessment a couple of years ago, like 2 months before the census was completed, we had thought in 2011 that the census was going to be scrapped, and so we wanted to say, like, how are we going to continue to know what's happening in our community? But fortunately, the census was reinstated, and we'll continue to have that information, but we'll continue to monitor this. You know, we have data now from 2006, 2011, 2016, so we're going to be able to see trends happening, and that's what those additional reports look at. There's more detail in those about those trends from 2006, 2011, and 2016. On these indicators.
Thank you.
Any other council? Councilor
Fancy? Well, we've got tons of questions. I'm just going to keep it light here. I noticed our age, that's the big thing. We see the average age where it came up in 2011, where we are at 53.5, the average age.
Yep.
And I was looking through Mahone Bay, I think it's 57 point something, so we see the age and the problems that are here now are going to get worse, because the average age is going to continue to climb.
Yep.
So what you're bringing here is numbers now are going to be worse in the future.
It will continue to, certainly. All suggestion is that the population will continue to age, and so there will continue to be challenges for especially those one-person households, because many of those are seniors who are living on the guaranteed income supplement and their pensions, and so that's pretty fixed rates, and usually they have lower incomes. So if you're a 1% household, you know the seniors are really struggling.
And then we look at the households and the what it would be to be able to make that 30%. And
yep.
You see the one person household, it's going to be around $600 a month, right? That way, if you put in around $600 a month for one person living in an apartment, and if it was a senior, where are you going to get $600 a month rent?
Well, yeah, and
so that puts them into a very bad spot, which is where we are today.
Yeah, and that's for people, you know, that number, that's for people who have that median income of the one-person household. So the ones that are in the middle of all the one-person household incomes, that median one. But there's also all the people below them that are also going to be struggling. And for region of Queens, if I can find this slide. Nope, it's not there. They're already behind from the get-go. They're already $70. Even at the median, they're already $70 past that poor housing need measure for affordability. So it is a challenge, and it's a challenge for builders and landlords to provide housing any less than that as well, is what we've heard over the years. To build them, that costs at least, you know, I think $650 was the last figure I heard a few years ago, so I'm sure that's increased to provide a one-bedroom apartment. So I think we need to continue to work with and advocate to the provincial and federal governments to increase those fundings. And with the new federal housing strategy coming, there's an opportunity. There, at least we have one. We didn't have that 5 years ago. And I think that it's important that we continue to advocate for rural communities to ensure that some of that money trickles out to us from the urban centers, where there's also huge housing challenges. But our needs look different, and we need to keep people in our communities. And we've heard that from seniors, that they want to stay in their community, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we support them to stay? So we need to come up with some solutions. The private sector can't do it all.
Mm-hmm.
We need to find ways to partner together. So we would encourage you to always keep housing on your mind when you have those opportunities to speak with developers or other politicians, other decision makers in the community, to see what their thoughts are on how we can improve access to healthy, safe, and affordable housing.
That's Councilor Campbell.
Well, there's nobody else there. I thought this would be back. This will be the last thing I'll get to. I met with Dave McCullough, who was at that meeting. And, of course, the CMHC, everybody thinks it's almost dissolved because you don't hear of it anymore. But it's almost renamed now to the National Housing Strategy, a place to call home.
Mm-hmm.
You can look it up. And when I looked on the site, they got $40 billion out there to strengthen communities and for chronic homelessness. And it's there right now to be accessed.
Yeah.
So it's a...
Yeah, and the provinces are currently working with CMHC, or the housing strategy folks, to look at what's going to be coming to Nova Scotia and what that will look like. I think Michael Graves, the councillor from the town of Bridgewater, who also comes to our coalition, he had done some calculations and said, I think it worked out to about $500,000 for each, for Lunenburg County, so I don't know how much more that would be for Queens if we included them in that calculation, in terms of what could come from that $40 billion back into our community, who's based on population. Not a lot. We can dream big, but it's an opportunity to have those conversations, and hopefully there'll be an effort made to partner with the community that knows what their needs are and has the connections. And I know there's a strong desire, especially in rural communities, to take care of each other. And I hope that the federal monies will be available to support communities to do that and do what they need to keep people in their homes and connected to their families.
Councilor Johnson?
This is good information, because it only strengthens our whole strategy on age-friendly communities all the way around. Is there any of your data, does it water down even more beyond just the region of Queens, does it water down to what's in the old town of Liverpool proper versus Port Mattoon or North Queens or something like that?
I can look. It's difficult. I'll look and see what's available. I don't know that the population is large enough in any of the smaller centers for them to report on it. That is one of the challenges. But that you might be able to get some information specific to the town of Liverpool. But I'll check and see what we can find. I just didn't dig any further. because, I mean, they collect it for a town of Mahone Bay, so
right.
Their population isn't huge.
But they're an identity within themselves.
Yeah.
The other question I had, now it's more of an education piece. The focus on the median numbers versus the average numbers, how does that make it more accurate or more realistic, I guess?
I think it kind of takes those outliers out of the equation in terms of bumping it up. You know, if you have a few people that are very wealthy in the community, it's not going to skew it higher than what it is. The median's right in the middle.
Yep.
This is where people are in the middle. And so that's why we like to use it, because it accounts for those super high incomes and those very low incomes a little bit. It doesn't skew it either way. It's just, this is the middle, this is that benchmark. So there's people above and there's people below.
Okay. Any other councillor this morning? Speak on the issue? Well, thank you very much, Nancy.
Thank you.
Appreciate the presentation.
Sorry for the slide confusion.
Tabling of petitions. We have no petitions to present today. Are there any petitions to be presented to council? Second call for petitions. Third and final call for petitions. We have no petitions today. Under 5.0, public question comment session. Members of the public gallery who would like to speak this morning, please state your name and address and limit your comments to 5 minutes or less, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. John Roberts of the Columbia Street Liverpool. There was one item here I was hoping not to have to mention this morning. I see that you put it under engineering and merch, and that is the water problem that arose yesterday. And who knows, all the municipalities seem to be breaking down and what have you. And it seemed to clear up that when the water was off for $6 on College Street, and it seemed to clear up a bit there on this evening, this morning, and it's looks like money.
We'll certainly find out what the conversation entails at that point in time.
Okay, then. And just a bit of good news. I see here you have rezoning. One is for the expansion of the fish plant here in Liverpool. And that's good to see. I understand the whole building and things will be, a lot of them will be going down and what have you. And we'll get a nice new plant there. And hopefully it will be close to the heat. So that's the good news.
Thank you, Leon. Any other member of the gallery?
Kim Williams, Park Street. I spent some time with a local business downtown in Liverpool yesterday, and we discussed an improvement that they wanted to put in, but they're finding it a little hard to get worked through. Oscars is looking to put in a ramp so they have accessibility into their cafe for seniors, for strollers, small children, anyone basically. That should be something that should be promoted, is accessibility for anybody who can do business. It doesn't matter where you are. They did have conversations, I understand, before with the mayor, and with an engineer was sent out. However, the individual did not talk to them inside, so it assessment for the ramp to go forward, and of course, there's not enough room. Maybe if the conversation had been with the managers and owners, they could have discussed it as to another way to do it, which would be to run it down the side of the building. Went up this morning at 7:30 with my measuring tape, and I've been on the internet getting what the requirements are, and I think that would have been a really good conversation for them to have together, is would this fit, how could it fit into this, and according to the measurements, I don't see an issue, but it'd be an engineer problem, of course. So if that could be put back on track, where that gentleman, or whoever it is that's the engineer that does that part of the assessing, could go back out and actually speak to the manager and the owners of the building at the time. They can go outside and actually do the measuring and look at it and come up with a solution for this, because it's something that is very dearly needed in this community. We need to be able to get people in. At this point, they're waiting for their customers to show up that they know are regulars. They're having to go out, open the doors, help them up the stairs, helping lift strollers up the stairs, and then when they go to leave, they have to again drop what they're doing on the counters, go out, help the individual back down again. This isn't using your time appropriately, and it's not safe for the customers to be doing the stairwell as well. If they could have a ramp in there, that'd be really nice. So if this could be looked at, this would be really good for not only the business, but for the people as well.
Thank you, Kim. We'll do a follow-up with the owners and ensure that possibilities are not lost.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other member of the gallery today would like to speak? Thank you very much. Moving on to 6.0, approval of minutes. 6.1, regular council meeting minutes, March 13th, 2018. Are there any errors or omissions in the minutes to circulate? Hearing none. A motion to approve the minutes of circulated would be in order. Approved by Councilor Mews, seconded by Councilor Kellogg. Any discussion? Ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Unanimous. Thank you. We have nothing today under 7.0, dangerous or unsightly premises. Nothing today under 8.0, economic development. Under corporate services, 9.0. We have 9.1, agreement with Queens County Museum. There is a motion recommendation circulated today. Who would like to take the lead on 9.1, Councilor Mew?
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality approve entry into a draft agreement with the Queens County Museum for the display of sports exhibits at the Queens Place the Mayor Center.
Second.
And that the mayor and the chief administrative officer be authorized to execute the agreement on the council's behalf.
Second is that motion, Councilor Fisk. CAO, would you like to give us a quick briefing on this?
Sure. So at the whole meeting, the agreement was discussed in great detail. At that time, the direction given to staff to add a reporting clause, which is now included in Section 8. Says the museums are landing required May 31st of each year to provide a written report. And that was the only request for change, so the agreement is the same as what was presented for me to hold that same issue.
Any questions or comments of councilors on this item? Are you ready for the question on the motion?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you. Under 10.0, engineering works, I would ask our Director of Engineering Works, Brad Roder, please come forward. Under 10.1, we have heavy equipment rental tender, being from Dr. Donnelly, recommended. Who would like to take the lead on this one? Councilor Fisk.
The Council of the Region of Queens is about to give acceptance to the heavy equipment rental tender for the 2018/2019 fiscal year, estimated in various pieces of equipment, and that the rental of equipment be based on the rental schedule as attached.
Seconded for that, Councilor Fancy. Brad, would you like to give us an update on that?
Yeah, this is an annual tender that
goes out for Queens County contractors where they submit prices per hour for the various pieces of equipment that they have to offer. We do at any point in time, we look at our need, if we have a need, and that's a piece of equipment, the size of equipment. We would look at the price structure, given that it's the right equipment for the job or the right size of equipment for the job. And we grant, most of our need is based on the tandem trucks, and that's hauling gravel. So that's really, from the contractor's point of view, that's where they get the most out of this. And we offer a rate that we increase, that went up 5 cents a ton this year for a gravel haul within Liverpool or the landfill. So we bring it up a little bit every year, try to keep pace with inflation and so on. And that works pretty well, relatively problem-free. You know, we try to make it as equal as we can with the people hauling the gravel, and it works pretty well. There's always a little bit, a few minor complaints here and there, but we make it as equal as we can, given, you know, a week. These truckers might be hauling for a week, the next week it'd be a different group of truckers, so they all can't haul at the same time. Sometimes they don't quite understand that, right? But it works.
Any questions or comments of councillors on this item today? Councillor Johnson?
Brad, just a quick question. When you do your schedule of handing this work out, do you base that as the lowest tender gets first choice, or do you work your way through the list?
If it's per hour, we would look at it and then and look at their tire weight compared to the amount of weight that they can haul. In other words, their capacity is, if it's the same per hour price, right? So obviously people that can haul more per hour would get the first crack at it until you go up to the next price level, right? In other words, the difference between, say, $55 and $60. Well, the ones that bid $55 an hour, we have to stack them somehow, right? So we look at how much they could haul. When it comes to hauling per ton, that really doesn't matter, right? Because we pay per ton.
Right.
In that case, we would pretty much go by the same order that we looked at before, but everybody would go through. And when we go to the get the list completed, we would start up again at the top, right, and then go all the way through again, right?
And that rate's across the region. And the reason why I ask that, I'm not trying to set you up for a question here, but the fact of it is that the folks who bid on this from North Queens maybe at $10, $15, $20 an hour more than the people in South Queens. But what happens if you're hauling bulk out our way? Is it the same price?
If we were hauling gravel out to Caledonia,
yes,
we would. We don't have a set price for that because we really don't haul that much gravel. We would probably take that out in our own trucks, right out of our own yard, because most of our volume is obviously construction, and, you know, for water and sewer, and of course at the landfill. So we do have specific prices for Milton, Brooklyn, and Liverpool. Is the one price $4.85 per metric ton, and then for the landfill is $6.90. Now, if we do a capital project out in Caledonia, what we would look at is the year prior leading into that, we would set a rate for that.
Okay.
Per ton.
The only reason why I ask that is so that I know I can deflect some of that stuff that happened last year with the project here.
Or we do it by the hour, right?
Good. Thanks, Brett.
Any other councilman? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. And then we have 10.2, report on recent water service interruption. Brandon, could you please report on that?
I'll give you a little run through what happened and what's outstanding. So 8:30 yesterday morning, the line off the main transmission line at the water treatment plant that goes into the backwash filters broke right at the shutoff valve. Probably the worst place it could break. The pipe gallery quickly filled with water, and that water was coming direct from the reservoir, so there was 800,000 gallons behind it, right? And with no way to shut it off. It flooded the various pumps that within the pipe gallery. It flooded electronic instrumentation. It got wet. Not just wet, submerged. You know, there's 8-9 feet of water. It was underwater. We quickly had to shut the water off at the plant, which shut water off into Liverpool, Brooklyn. And worked throughout the day to dewater that area, get rid of that water in that area, and then assemble some couplings and some repairs to try to effect the repairs. We got the repairs done on the pipe, but only to the point where the flooded pumps, because they were all underwater as well, could be assessed for water damage. You know, test them to see if they still had life left in them. And then the plant was restarted and the water supply returned to town. And I say town, Liverpool, Brooklyn. That was about 3:30 yesterday afternoon when the water was returned back into the dry system. And of course, all the pipes were dry. It filled relatively quickly, probably a little quicker than we thought. We ran it pretty hard to get, you know, to return water as quick as we could. The users were able to access the water, you know, within minutes, really, some of them, right, once that water was put back on. Now, additional measures to fully complete the repairs are going to occur at the plant over the course of time. It's ongoing. I'll get into that a little bit here in a minute. But our priority yesterday was to get the water back into the system as quick as we could, and that was our top priority. Now, when the water was reintroduced into the system, of course, air had to be evacuated from the pipes. They were full of air. And anytime you do that, you pick up discolored water. Because remember, our transmission systems, they're 100 years old. So they're tuberculated and full of sediment and you know, mineralization. And once you flow a lot of water in that, it picks that up. That's where you discolored water. People call it mud. It's not mud. Right? But I hear that term all the time. It's not mud. Now to do this, we had to make as much water as we could, because we can only make so much water at the plant. It's not like it used in the old days where you took it just off the lake. It's not the way we make water anymore. So you run through DAF filters, you can only make so much water. So we made as much water as we could so that we could flush overnight and last night. But there's times we couldn't keep up. The reservoir was dropping dangerously low. And you know, given the flushing demand and then demand that the users put on the system, because people, rightly so, was running their own lines to clear, you know, their discoloration from their own, you know, service ladders or buildings and so on, right? We had to sort of ease off the flushing last night, or we would have had no water this morning, right? So we had to, you know, have to think ahead a little bit, obviously, so you have the water for the morning demand. Fortunately, I mean, the discolored water moves through the system almost like in a wave, and that's why there was a comment today, there is some discolored water, but we're finding a lot of that is more to the further reaches of the system now. So the closer reaches are running clear, and those further reaches, they'll clear up throughout the day, right? So, you know, we are flushing still as much as we can, but, you know, people, you know, just be patient, that water will clear up soon, right? And it moves through, as you think of it, because I know in areas, as soon as the water came back, you turn the taps on, the taps were running clear. Well, that was water that was still in the pipes, right? You know, the only thing, never had any pressure behind it, but it was still there. So you have that so-called slug of water coming through, and then the dirtier, discolored water was coming in behind it, and we got that cleared up. Now the problem we have now, though, is, and this we experienced this last night, there were many technical issues with that plant, because there were so many faults, ground faults, electrical problems that occurred with all that instrumentation in the water. The plant was shutting off by itself. We restarted, it was shut off, it restarted. So that went on all night long, right, trying to keep this plant going so we could make some water. Mentioned there a minute ago, the instrumentation, a lot of that was underwater, so you know, we lost a lot of the automation ability, and all that will have to be replaced. There was a lot of erroneous alarms going off. Some were erroneous, some were real alarms. We have to address that. We have to bring in a technician that we use whenever we up and running now, but now we're faced with a bill that we have to replace the flow meters, the analyzers, diverting meters, pH meters, pressure transducers, this, that, and the other thing in the plant, right? So there are additional piping repairs that will need to be done, because what we did yesterday is the interim temporary repairs. They're not the permanent repairs at all. So we'll have to figure out a method of, you know, how we get those repairs without losing water, and then we'll figure something out, right? But we got water back on, but we still got a lot of work to do. That's about it. Where we're at.
Thank you, Brad. Any questions or comments of councilors? Councilor Kelly?
Hi, Brad. A couple of questions. The first one, have you assessed, like, what was the original reason for the break?
Crack pipe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right in a coupling. They had that shut off valve, isolation valve.
The reason for the break was just wear and tear, or is it?
Well, who knows why, like, you know, that plant is 10 years old, right? So it's not old.
Okay.
And it was Schedule 80 PVC pipe, a pretty thick wall, but it had a crack in it about that long, right in the coupling. Right.
Okay.
That's where the water.
The other one is, I had a lot of questions from residents about what is actually the discoloration. Like you say, it isn't mud, but what is it? People were interested in finding why they're, what was coloring their water, that color?
It's mostly iron.
Iron.
It is, you know, because that iron, over the course of time, you have to remember, for 100 years, those pipes were running basically raw water through them. It's not like water that we have now that is treated, and you're taking the minerals and so out of it. And that deposits on the pipe, and over the course of decades, it builds up, called, you know, tuberculation. And that's why, you know, in Liverpool, the old pipe, and where we are aggressive now, that at least on a yearly capital program, part of that program is replacing pipes within Liverpool. Because you can start with a pipe that's this big, but we're finding, once we pull it out of the ground now, it's tuberculated, so what's actually going through is about that big, right? You know, so you're losing probably 3/4 of your volume, of your pipe, because of that incrustation buildup, and that sloughs off, right? When you flush or you put sudden water through it, that's what the water is. It's mostly iron. Iron, some manganese, you know, things like that.
And third question is, that we know that Wick Wire is without water this morning. Do we know what that issue is?
Kevin, one of our foremen's in contact with them. They have water at the street, so there are problems within their own building.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not a utility problem.
Okay.
Because there is water right up to the building, but somewhere's in the building, they've got a clogged something, right? So they're trying to figure that out.
Right, thank you.
Councilor Fancy?
Interesting, Brad, what's going on there. Because, you know, what you've all done is really quite remarkable to get it going that quickly. Because, you know, I've worked with DAF units and such as things like that. The DAF unit doesn't work very well when the temperature isn't even right to be able to make it operate properly. So you're trying to put things through filters that are plugging up. Your filters and softeners and things like that aren't working well. So you're trying to get water out to the public, and everybody works it at the top notch. And you can't do that unless you'd be days catching up to the amount of water you can actually make it proper.
That's right. And it's still, it's safe, fully compliant water that we're sending. We're not sending raw water.
No.
We would never. Because if we sent raw water, we'd have to go on a boiler.
That's right.
We want to avoid that, of course. Right.
So, and along with it, like you're saying, the any place that has filters, and you're going to get slugs of stuff. So anybody who has filtering system, I'm sure off the Wick Wire, they have filtering system, that all plugs up. So you're going to have to clean out all your filters, keep cleaning them, until finally everything gets going. So it's incredibly good that to up and running that quickly.
Any other councilman have a question or comment this morning? Well, thank you, Brad, for the report, I think. Very quickly. We'll move on now to 11-0 Finance, and I would ask Director of Finance, Jennifer Keating Guza, if she'd like to come forward. We have an item under 11.1, Regional Queens Municipality, General Insurance. Who would like to take the lead on 11.1? 11.1. Counselor Felix?
So move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality award the 2018 RFP for General Insurance and Risk Management Services to Aaron Risk Solutions for the year April 1st, 2018 to March 31st, 2019, with the option to renew for additional years based on satisfaction with pricing and service, among other things.
Seconded to that motion. Counselor Mews? Jennifer, would you like to give us a brief update on this?
So we had been faced with pretty substantial increases to our insurance premiums over the last number of years. The last 2 years, the increases hadn't been quite as high, but they had been steady leading up to that point. So we were in the range of $185,000-$190,000 a year for our premiums. So it just became noticeably time that we go back out to the market and see what we could get for a better premium, better pricing. So we reviewed the binders that we received, substantial 4-inch binders, so there was a lot of information to go through, but the bottom line is that really the coverage and the policies that were offered by the three proponents were all very comparative. There is a little bit more offered from BFL, but it wasn't anything that we had asked for, so it was kind of in addition to what was proposed. I do have a history with AJG, was formerly Bell and Grant, and so we had worked with them and had them as our insurance holders for a number of years. And prior to that, the agent that is currently with BFL was our go-to and our contact at AJG for quite a number of years. So I do have history and experience with both AJG and BFL, BFL's agent. So I did feel that history was important, and the experience and the knowledge that we received from the agent that worked with both of them was substantial. However, it wasn't enough to justify the difference in the premium, where Aon came in at 103 and BFL came in at the 159. So we're looking for the best bang for our buck, of course, always. So if there's a little bit more research or analysis required at any point when we have to kind of go to our insurance carrier or we need to use them for anything, then staff will have to pick that up. Really couldn't justify the difference in premium. So Aon is my recommendation.
Thanks, Jennifer. Any questions or comments of counselors? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? It is unanimous. Thank you very much. Under 12.0, Recreation and Community Facilities, we have some items today, and I'm asked Megan Roberts to help us out with this. Under 12.1, we have Tournament Special Assistance Program, a recommendation. Would like to take the lead on 12.1. Councilor Fancy?
I'd like to recommend that the Council of the Region, the Queens Municipality, give pre-budget approval for a Tournament Special Event Assistance Grant of $500 to the Liverpool Lady Cougars to host the 2018 Hot on the Ice Women's Hockey Tournament, and that it be funded from community grants and program budget line of the Recreation and Healthy Communities Department.
Seconded to that motion. Councilor Kelly. Megan, would you like to speak in?
Sure. So this is the 6th annual tournament that they're having at Queen's Place. Last year was the first year they held it on Mother's Day, just to try something new to see if they could get families to come along with the teams. They had a huge, well, for them, they don't usually get too many people that come apart from the teams. Last year they had families come. They spent the whole weekend here. They did a social for the teams. They give at the end, they honor all the mothers and they give cookies. So they made it a really fun tournament. Everybody looks forward to coming. They usually have a waiting list to get into the tournament, and it's a really good event. They they're great, and we look forward to them coming back again this year.
Any counselors have any questions or comments on this? Counselor Kelly?
Yeah, I'd just like to say, I mean, this is an amazing tournament. These mm-hmm. women, and I mean, my sister is part of this. She's on the,
yep.
the women's team, and they put the call out for teams, and they're oversubscribed within hours
yep.
of the call going out for teams. So, mm-hmm. yeah, she says, what better way to celebrate your mom if you love to play hockey and there's a tournament, and that's where mom's going, right? So it's great.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a great tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other counselors? Are you ready to ask Counselor Fitz?
Megan,
mm-hmm.
does it draw a large crowd of people?
Last year they did because they had a lot of families that came with them. There are quite a few local people that come and watch. So this kind of brought the additional into it. Yeah, I mean, as with any tournament, you know, it's kind of hit or miss depending on the weather outside. But last year they did have a really good turnout for it, and that's why they stuck with the same date, and they're looking forward to it. Yeah.
Counselor Johnson?
Just a quick one,
yeah.
Megan. This
yeah.
one and the other request, as part of our support, what do we get for like promotion or recognition that we are supporting?
So they always put out that they were sponsored through a grant from the region. Yeah, so that's.
So just in whatever
yep.
their promotional material is.
Yep, usually.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other counselor have a comment or a question? Are you ready for the question on the motion?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Unanimous, thank you. 12.2, Sport Travel Assistance Program. Who would like to take the lead on 12.2? Councilor Kelly.
I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give three bars of approval for a Sport Travel Assistance Grant of $150 to Michaela Harnish to participate as part of Team Leducer of the Lakeshore Curling Club in the U18 Canadian Curling Championships being held in St. Andrews, New Brunswick, and that it be funded from the Community Grants and Programs budget line of the Recreation and Healthy Communities Department.
Seconded by Councilor Fisk. Megan, would you like to
So Michaela and her team, Michaela is obviously a local resident. She curls with a team out of Halifax, so she's made a significant time investment in her curling. They won the under-18 provincial championship, so they're going to represent Nova Scotia at the Canadian championship for the under-18s. That's this year being held in New Brunswick. According to our policy, you're funded based on whether you're a team or an athlete. The team isn't local, but the athlete is local, so we fund her as an athlete. And then it depends on where they're going, so whether it's Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, PEI, Newfoundland, or if you have to travel. So then it's a scale depending on whether you're going to Ontario or, you know, Manitoba, BC. So according to that policy, she's an athlete and she's going to New Brunswick, so she's funded the $150.
Any questions or comments from counselors on this one? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of the motion? Thank you very much, and thank you.
Welcome.
We'll move on to 13.0 planning. I ask our planning director 5 to come forward. Under 13.1, rezoning request, we have 17 School Street in Milton. We would like to take the lead on this one. Councilor Fancy.
I so recommend that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality give notice of its intention to rezone a portion of PID number 701622201 from Institutional 1I1 to Multiple Unit Residential R3, that a public hearing be held on April 24, 2018 in the Council Chambers of the Municipal Building, 249 White Point Road in Liverpool, Nova Scotia, at 8:45 a.m.
Seconded to that motion. Councilor Fisk. Mike, would you get us brief again, please?
I have a little bit of background. We've received application from the owner of the property located at 17 School Street, which you're all familiar with being the former Milton Centennial School. The property is currently zoned as institutional I-1 under the land use bylaw. It was rezoned back in 2015 to accommodate the Prince of Wales Masonic Lodge, which had purchased the property from the municipality back in 2015. Now, the new owner of the property wishes to convert some of the unutilized space within that building to residential dwelling units for rent. So under the existing zoning, institutional zoning, it allows for the creation of up to 3 residential units, which are in association with the main institutional use being the lodge. Those units are currently under construction. However, it's the intent of the owner to move beyond the 3 residential units.